Welcome to the podcast of Lansdowne United Methodist Church. We're so glad that you're joining us online. Today's message by Pastor David Jacobson is entitled, Get Your Feet Wet. It was recorded on Sunday, November 5th, 2017, and is based on Joshua chapter 3, verses 7 through 17, which read as follows. The Lord said to Joshua, This day I will begin to exalt you in the sight of all Israel, so that they may know that I will be with you as I was with Moses. You are the one who shall command the priests who bear the Ark of the Covenant. When you come to the edge of the waters of the Jordan, you shall stand still in the Jordan. Joshua then said to the Israelites, Draw near and hear the words of the Lord your God. Joshua said, By this you shall know that among you is the living God who without fail will drive out from before you the Canaanites, the Hittites, Hivites, Perizzites, Girgashites, Amorites, and Jebusites. The Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of all the earth is going to pass before you into the Jordan. So now select 12 men from the tribes of Israel, one from each tribe. When the soles of the feet of the priests who bear the Ark of the Lord of all the earth, rest in the waters of the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan flowing from above shall be cut off. They shall stand in a single heap. When the people set out from their tents to cross over the Jordan, the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant were in front of the people. Now, the Jordan overflows all its banks throughout the time of harvest. So when those who bore the Ark had come to the Jordan, and the feet of the priests bearing the Ark were dipped in the edge of the waters flowing from above stood still, rising up in a single heap far off at Adam, the city that is beside Zarethan. While those flowing toward the Sea of Arabah, the Dead Sea, were wholly cut off. Then the people crossed over opposite Jericho. While all Israel were crossing over on dry ground, the priests who bore the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stood on dry ground in the middle of the Jordan until the entire nation finished crossing over the Jordan. I'd like to speak to you this morning from a title. And the title for my sermon is Get Your Feet Wet. Last week, we spoke about Joshua and how the one thing that set him apart for leadership in for the people of Israel was that he was filled with the spirit of wisdom. And wisdom was the primary trait that was going to enable him to lead the people out of the wilderness where they had been wandering for 40 years and into the promised land. And so in today's passage, Joshua has led the Israelites to the threshold of the land that God promised to give Abraham and to his descendants, to the Jordan River. The Jordan is the most substantial river in that area of the world, and it averages about 100 feet across. In normal times, it's anywhere from 2 to 10 feet deep, which doesn't sound very much, but its waters move quickly. And so because of this, the crossing of the Jordan was a common concern in ancient times. And so it served as a natural boundary for the land. And just as an aside for this All Saints Day, because the Jordan is a boundary to the Promised Land, people frequently allude to crossing the Jordan, or even our last hymn allude to crossing the river, as a way to talk about someone who has gone on to be with the Lord, someone who has entered into the spiritual Promised Land. Just a little bonus for all you there. So naturally, as Joshua approaches the Jordan, there would be a concern about how his company would cross. I mean, there are a few of them, you know, a few Israelites. How many do you think there were? Just, you know, get a number in your head. So according to Numbers chapter 26, there were more than 600,000 adult male Israelites. With women and children, we're certainly talking more than a million people, maybe upwards of 2 million people, who are envisioned in this passage as poised to cross the River Jordan. And so adding to the difficulty of this task, the river was apparently in flood stage. But God speaks to Joshua in verse 8, and he says, Give this order to the priests who carry the Ark of the Covenant. When you come to the edge of the waters of the Jordan, you are to take your stand in the river. And then God tells the people through Joshua, by this you will know that the living God is among you and will defeat your enemies. The Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of all the earth is to cross the Jordan before you. And then listen to this in verse 13. When the soles of the feet of the priests who bear the Ark of the Lord rest in the waters of the Jordan, the waters shall be cut off and they shall stand in a single heap. God says, as soon as the priests carrying the ark set foot in the Jordan, the waters will be cut off. So I'd like for you to imagine yourself as a priest carrying the ark. Joshua's got 1 or 2 million people rallied up and ready to cross over the Jordan. Wouldn't it be nice? Would it be too much to ask God? Would you just cut off the waters of the Jordan, like, before I have to step in the river? Plus, you've been waiting 40 years to enter into this land. Can't we at least wait until the water isn't in flood stage? And then there's all these people watching. I mean, you've got yourself a nice, respectable position as a priest. What are the people going to think when they see this? I mean, you've never mentioned it to anyone, but you've always thought that your parents' stories of Moses parting the Red Sea had probably gotten a bit exaggerated over the years. But Joshua is the leader that Moses appointed, and you want to be obedient. And so out of more obedience than faith, you say, okay, I'll get my feet wet. We'll see if God shows up and does something. And so you step in the river, you get your feet wet. So that's one possible outlook that you might have as a priest. And it's my own personal experience that God will frequently use acts of obedience and half-hearted faithfulness like that. But there is another possibility. Imagine yourself, again, as a priest carrying the ark. You are absolutely confident that you have no ability whatsoever to stop the flow of the Jordan. I mean, you don't have to try it out to determine it because you just know it's not true. It's just a fact. You cannot do it. But here's the thing. You are carrying the presence of God in the Ark of the Covenant. And when you touch the water, the presence of God touches the water. And so you believe with all your heart that the second your heel hits the water is going to flee in obedience to its maker. But God lets you have the first step. God doesn't force you to get your feet wet. Sure, God could have stopped the river without the priest setting foot in the water. But God seems to choose to use humans and human means to build faith and draw us into a relationship. God chooses to take human steps of obedience and bless them. So by the priests putting their feet in the water, they demonstrate their own insufficiency. They can't do it. At the same time, they demonstrate God's might. If the priests were not carrying the presence of God, you'd end up with some cranky old men with wet feet. But no matter what the outcome is, getting your feet wet is a step of humility. It's a step that says, God, I can't produce the results on my own, but I'm willing to get uncomfortable so that your power could be made known. And so this morning, I just want to encourage us really with this. Get your feet wet. In our personal walks with God, we want to know that God is faithful before we put our trust in God. We want to know that God's promises are true before we have to rely on them. But frequently, that is just not the way that it works. More often, we sense God pulling us in some direction, pulling us toward an obstacle. And then when we act out of obedience and hopefully in faith, we then see that God is faithful. There's this verse from the book of Malachi, chapter 3, verse 10. It says, "Bring your whole tithe," that's 10% of the harvest, "into the storehouse, that there may be food in my house." And then it says, "Test me in this, says the Lord Almighty, and see if I will not throw open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing that there will be not room to store it." The tithe is an example of a costly getting your feet wet, where God responds to our action in power and with blessing. It's just one of those things that doesn't particularly make sense before you do it and see for yourself that God is faithful. God waits on us, just one example, God waits on us to get our feet wet before showing up in power. This insight into how God tends to work goes beyond our personal relationship with God, though, and it speaks into our life as a church. According to 1 Chronicles 28:2, the Ark of the Covenant was God's footstool on earth. God's throne is in heaven. God's footstool is on earth, and particularly in the Ark of the Covenant. And so that means that the place where God's presence was most powerfully focused was the Ark of the Covenant, which eventually came to rest in the temple, the tabernacle, and then the temple. And so as the priests carry the Ark into the river, the presence of God is beginning to enter into a new land. Well, maybe you're in a place, you're someone who knows that you should be stepping out in faith, but you're just finding it really difficult. I think that most of the time it's because we start asking ourselves these what if questions. So I just wanted to give you a few of these. Number one, what if the presence of God isn't with me? Well, if that is your concern, you are in good company. Moses was once concerned that the presence of God wouldn't be with him. And so he basically told God, "Look, I'm not going to do this unless your presence goes with us." It sounds a little obstinate to us, maybe, but there's a deep realism to it. When we face things that we know we can't do on our own, we need God's presence. This is not just a theoretical need, it is a great need. But here's some good news of Jesus for you. If you are a disciple of Jesus Christ, you are a member of the body of Christ, and if you're in the body of Christ, you carry the presence of God with you wherever you go. And as Paul says to the Corinthian church, don't y'all know that y'all are God's temple and that God's spirit dwells in y'all? I bet you didn't know that Paul was a southerner, but that's pretty literally what the Greek says. But the point is that as people who live after the resurrection and after Pentecost, the coming of the Spirit, we live in the age of the Spirit. And Jesus told the woman at the well in John chapter 4 that the hour is coming when you will worship God, neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem, and that true worshipers will worship God in spirit and in truth. There's no need for the Ark of the Covenant any longer. There's no need for the temple in Jerusalem any longer. We, the church, are now God's temple. And if we are Christians at all, we carry God's presence with us wherever we go. So go ahead, get your feet wet. Here's another what if. What if I'm not the right person to take this step of faith? Well, this I know. Given the choice between a person with great natural abilities but little faith and faithfulness, and someone with little natural abilities, but great faith and faithfulness, God chooses the faithful one every time. Abraham was old. In fact, Paul says his body was as good as dead, and his wife couldn't bear children. And yet God told him that he would become the father of many nations, and that his descendants would be a blessing to the whole earth. That sounds like an unlikely character. Moses murdered someone, and he couldn't speak well, and yet God makes him the leader to bring the Hebrew people out of captivity. Another unlikely person. Here's one for you. Rahab, the prostitute who helped Joshua's army spy out Jericho, she became an ancestor of Jesus Christ. David, the runt of the family, He defeated Goliath because he believed more in the power of God than he believed in the natural ability of his opponent. Josiah, he became a king at the age of 8 and led one of the greatest revivals in the history of God's people. Paul, a great opponent of the church, but when he became obedient to the word of Christ, God made him into the church's greatest missionary. Peter, James, John, the uneducated fishermen, testifying powerfully to Jesus before high government officials. James, the tax collector, Mary Magdalene, who had 7 demons, but who becomes the apostle to the apostles when Jesus sends her from the empty tomb to witness to the resurrection. What if you're not the right person? Well, the Bible almost has more doubt if you think you are the right person. Do you have faith? Do you have a willing heart? Go ahead, get your feet wet. And here's one last what if. What if the waters don't part? What if God doesn't do what we had expected and hoped that God would do? And in a sense, this is the biggest and most important what if of taking any step of faith, whether it's individually or as a church. Sometimes God indeed will give special gifts of faith to people so that they can have just an unshakable confidence that God is going to act powerfully. Frequently, though, we don't have that type of faith. We're left to question, what if God doesn't do it? And I'll tell you something, I want so badly to be doing thing after thing that will make us look like idiots if God doesn't act. The church in America in general is very good at doing only the things that we can, to a large extent, control the outcome of. But that isn't where God's presence is obvious. God shows up in power when the river is in flood stage and there is no way to cross apart from God's power. When God is the only hope, have faith for a miracle. When God is the only hope, have faith for a miracle. But seriously, what if God doesn't show up? Here's the news. Here's some good news. The worst case scenario is that you are not worse off than you were before, except your feet are wet and you may have looked a little bit silly. But let's be honest. Your feet will dry, and you probably look silly more often than you think anyway. And if you look silly stepping out in faith and getting your feet wet, well, at least you look silly in obedience to God. So my brothers and sisters, I have to share that I believe that we're coming to a Jordan crossing moment as a congregation and perhaps even as the United Methodist Church. We can't go where we need to go without the power of God. All I mean to say is this: can there be any doubt that Lansdowne, the community in which we as a church inhabit, desperately needs to know and experience the presence of God? And yet there is a sort of invisible Jordan River separating us and so much of the church from carrying the presence of God to the other side. I mean, the task of transforming our community for Christ, of making disciples for the transformation of the world, it is an insurmountable task. We need God to make a way. But I believe that God is speaking to us today. And God is saying that if we carry the presence of God into the places where God is not known, that God will back us up, that God will make a way. We can't stay put. We've got to step out in faith. And I don't know what that looks like in all cases, but I know that we've got to get our feet wet because it's too desperate of a situation not to step out. And if that sounds too vague for you, because it is still pretty vague, next Saturday, just come and help vision. How are we going to step out? Because the floodwaters are high. The river is moving fast. And we've got to step out in faith. But an invitation I want to give this morning to each of us as individuals is this. If you're in a point in your life where you are facing a big obstacle, whether it's a big transition that you're coming up to or something that's just got a big question mark over it, something where you realize that you just really need the presence and the power of God. When we come up for communion, just bring that forward with you. And if you want, after you've received, you can come up to the rail for a time of prayer. But Jesus tells us that the bread and the wine are his body and blood. So when you come, let Jesus stir your faith. And as we go, we can go in the confidence, once again, that we indeed carry the presence of God with us.